Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Presented by the FTN Network, this two-man fast break runs you through the best cash and tournament options for every game on today's slate.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the brand new podcast here on the FTN Network of Podcasts. It is the FTN NBA DFS Podcast. Thrilled to be here. Really, really interesting timing with the NBA season now back in full swing. The bubble has been live for about a week now, and honestly, the NBA product is just as good still. But my name is Adam Pfeiffer. I co-host the Fade the Chalk podcast with Derek Brown here at FTN. Joined every single time we do this podcast, my co-host Joe Metz, who I have plenty of history and experience with. Joe, I'm thrilled that we got this podcast going. I wish it were like earlier in the season, but obviously things happen. But yeah, we have the rest of the regular season and the playoffs in this bubble, which, right, like I said, right now, it's the NBA looks as good as ever still. It's been the one sport that's still been great. So, Joe, how are we doing, man? And how are we feeling here at FTN?
I'm excited. I mean, seeing the constant tools we're rolling out at FTN, especially for NBA, has been incredible. This podcast, I'm super excited to co-host and co-manage with you. I think the silver lining here, you know, you said you wish it was earlier in the season. I'm happy it's now because we're getting year-round NBA basketball. That is not something I'm ever going to complain about. The bubble play has been much crisper and much sharper than I expected, aside from, in my opinion, the officiating. But I'm excited. We have all-day basketball. This is better than March Madness.
Yeah, that is the X factor, too. We have, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon basketball games, which then translates to, okay, you're watching from 2 to 5 to 7 to 9 to 11. Like, you're just watching it all day, which is awesome. So this podcast is going to be pretty cut and dry. Joe and I, every night, well, maybe it'll probably be three times a week for now. You know, we'll obviously be linking up as much as we can, and then would love to continue this for the 2020 season, which, you know, seems like forever from now. But yeah, we'll be breaking down the slate the night before. So obviously here we're talking about Wednesday slate, breaking down each game, talking about who we like for DFS purposes, and you know, kind of talking about how we are going to, you know, construct lineups. You mentioned some of these tools over at FTN, FTN Bets, FTN Daily, FTN Fantasy. All three sites have been live for, you know, I want to say almost a month now. It's kind of flown by, but you know, at one point last week there was over 800 pieces of content. We have it for any sport. We have a huge, huge loaded team for NFL, led by, of course, Brad Evans and Jeff Ratcliffe. Then there's the NBA stuff where Stefano, happy birthday Stefano, has been taking the lead on that. Kyle Murray's been doing his Saber Sims, his projections. He's been huge. Javi's obviously been just, you know, winning everything. And it's not just that. I mean, we have League of Legends that Javi's been killing. We have tennis led by Josh Gross. We have baseball, obviously. Matty Wood and those guys doing the podcast over there. And just any sport, PGA, you name it. We have odds. We have podcasts for football. And then the tools. Have to shout out the tools, especially, like you said, for NBA. I mean, we announced it last week, the advanced defense versus position. It's going to be something that I'm going to be plugging in my articles a ton because it's just so cool. So, and I think this will be something that you'll understand as well, because I'm pretty sure you play NBA 2K, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you have your archetype players. You know, LeBron would be, you know, a slashing point forward, such type of player. You know, Curry, obviously, you know, a three-point guy, shooter. And you have those traits for your players. This NBA Advanced DVP tool is essentially that. We have Stefano, who helped, and Josh Colacci, and I think Anthony Miko. These guys have all played a huge role in creating it. They go through every NBA player and give them traits that you know, that correlates with their game. So I'll pull it up right now. Give me a player to kind of tease.
Do Russell Westbrook.
All right, so you type in Russell Westbrook, and this is obvious. This is on FTNDaily.com. Then you go to the NBA tools. So Russell Westbrook, he has 5 traits, is what they're called. He's got dimer, primary ball handler, scorer, crafty finisher, and superstar. then you can see the data, and it shows fantasy points per game. You can click on any trade. So if you click on Dimer, you can see the teams that allow the most fantasy points per game to that trade. Or you can combine trades. So, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo would be, you know, a rebounder and a, you know, a scorer, a crafty finisher. So you can use those traits and find out which and Stefano broke it down when he went on the live video. It really tells more of a story because, yeah, James Harden is a quote unquote shooting guard, but he's much more than that because he's so ball dominant, and it really shows you what matchups are better for how players play. So this is probably honestly my favorite tool I've ever seen since I've been in the fantasy sports industry.
Yeah, I'm 100% in the same boat. You know, I'm looking at it right now, and you obviously understand it gives you the option to understand and encapsulate the basic DVP, which is what you see, you know, most of the industry, and admittingly this is what I fell into, you know, when I was with other sites before a tool like this was developed. It just truly doesn't paint the whole picture. You know, you see the Bucks obviously number one in defensive efficiency, but when you break it down, they do struggle a bit more than usual against superstars or crafty finishers, shooters. Like, there are holes in just about every defense, and being able to identify that can give you a ton of edge, especially in large field tournaments when people, you know, like I mentioned the Bucks, you never target players against that team, but there are reasons to do so at much lower ownership.
Yeah, and it's the best way to, because there's, you know, every team has a shooting guard on the floor, but there are so many different ways that different shooting guards play. Obviously, James Harden plays vastly different than a Danny Green or a Gary Harris. Those guys are more 3-and-D guys, and they're going to make their living off screens and off spot and shoot opportunities. So I love it. It's really, really helpful. And it, you know, and the other thing I'll add before we get started, I love that it also includes bench players. So, like, you'll see Jordan Clarkson, who we'll talk about momentarily. One of his traits is obviously, bench. It'll show not only can you find other, you know, other ways how many points teams allow to the bench, but it shows exactly the fantasy points per game to bench units and which teams struggle with their second units on the floor. So I love it. Hat tip to Stefano and Josh and everybody at the FTN team. And I'm sure you agree with me and say the same, that we are just thrilled beyond measure to be a part of the FTN network. And it's
100%. And the crazy part is I really feel like we've just seen the tip of the iceberg.
That is the scary part, honestly. I mean, 800 pieces of content, that was days ago. I mean, we're...
Huge, huge shout out to our editors.
Daniel Kelly.
I can't imagine how many hours that, you know, John, Zach, and Daniel have put in. It's asinine to understand how many words and how many corrections they've made. So big shout out to those guys.
Yeah, so we are thrilled to be here. Thank you for tuning in. Appreciate any support you can give us. And let's get started with the first slate breakdown of the podcast. Six games, I think, on six Wednesday. The first one starting at 2:30 between the Memphis Grizzlies and the Utah Jazz. This game currently with an implied total of, up the last time I checked. Well, actually, we got some line movement here. It looks like 225 is the current total, and the Jazz are favored by 4.5. Injury news, as Jaren Jackson Jr., who got off to a ridiculously hot start in the bubble, will now miss the remainder of the season with a torn meniscus. Brutal, brutal loss for this team that's trying to hold on to that final spot in the Western Conference playoff seeding. Joe, how does this impact this team? I mean, it's you know, their second best player, third best player. I mean, you could argue Jovall and him are their second best players, or John Morant, but it's clearly one of their three most important pieces, and it's going to be a huge loss.
Yeah, I think, especially in the bubble, I do think Jaren Jackson has been almost their most impressive offensive player. He's really developed his game. He's limited the fouls. And when he's playing the best, obviously the biggest blow hits. The direct beneficiary is going to be Brandon Clark. He's going to be thrust into 25-plus minutes a game. Pretty cheap across the industry, under 5K. I don't expect that to be the case long, but he is a dynamic player. He crashes the boards, he reads the passing lanes, and he can score. So I think he is going to be the first person that's going to step into the role, probably step into the starting role. But there is a trickle-down effect. You know, if you run an on-off tool with him off the court, you actually see decent usage bumps to a player like Grayson Allen, who came out last game and had a bigger impact than most people think. Dylan Brooks sees almost a 2% usage rate bump. D'Anthony Melton does too. So some of these players take with a grain of salt. Obviously, D'Anthony Melton isn't someone you're going to go out and target in every cash game, especially against Utah. But the trickle-down effect is a lot bigger than just the backup power forward here is what I'm trying to say. Brandon Clark, I think, is going to be a great play for a while. Do you? What else are you seeing with the absence of Jaren Jackson?
Yeah, I mean, Brandon Clark, obviously the first guy that stood out when seeing Jaren Jackson Jr. would be out. 26% rebounding rate, 1.1 fantasy points per minute with Jackson off the floor. Then Joval has just a massive rebounding rate. It's at 43% and 1.36 fantasy points per minute. I feel like most people are just going to go right to Brandon Clark, but I mean, we know Joval for like 3 years now has been one of the best per-minute players in fantasy, at least at the center position. He's been awesome. But the problem is he's always been, you know, in Toronto, he was, you know, 23, 24 minutes. Then with Memphis, it's been a little better, but, you know, you'll rarely see him in that 32, 33-minute range. Could this thrust him to that that amount of minutes? And if that's the case, he's more than in play at 7,400. He's an 8K player if he's playing, you know, 34, 35 minutes potentially. And again, this is the final stretch of the regular season. Like, Memphis has to win these games to hold on to that 8th spot in the playoff seating. So could Joval kind of be a little bit sneaky here if everybody just goes to Brandon Clark?
I think so. I think in this matchup particularly, he could be. You know, a lot of NBA teams are running small. Utah is not one of them. So as long as Rudy Gobert is on the court, I think they're going to need the big body of Joval. Obviously not the most enticing matchup against the reigning defensive player of the year, but when you dive deeper, especially as Adam mentioned, our advanced defensive versus position tool, it's not the worst matchup at the same time. You know, Utah's a middling opponent when you evaluate Joval's three traits, which are a scorer, skilled center, and rebounder, bottom third of the league in skilled centers, and middling against scorer and rebounder. So I think for his price, there is upside here, and I highly, highly doubt he's going to garner any attention tomorrow.
Yeah, I anytime I can get Joval, and like Joval's such a good tournament play because of that upside, but now yep. you might get more safety with him if he's pushed to 34 minutes. John Morant's 8K. I mean, he obviously has a really high usage rate with Jaren Jackson Jr. off the floor. My problem, and Utah's been a pretty, like, the way you score them is with pick and roll ball handlers. They actually got the second most points per game to the pick and roll ball handler. The problem for me is, and it kind of scares me because I never get this guy right, but I think I'd prefer Donovan Mitchell in the same game at $500 cheaper. What do you think of John Morant?
I like John Morant. He's been much more aggressive in the bubble. He's gotten off to some slow starts. I think the pace-up matchup really benefits a volume shooter like Mitchell more on a dollar-per-dollar standpoint. With that said, I think John Morant will garner a lot of attention. Utah is 26th in the league against dimers, 25th in the league against primary ball handlers, but then when it comes to actually producing, they're top 10 against crafty finishers, top 15 against scorers. So I prefer Donovan Mitchell. His volume has gone up every game since he's been in the bubble, and this is going to be the biggest pace-up game, and frankly, the most lenient defense he's gone against so far. He's had some pretty stiff competition. He's performed well so far.
Yeah, and you mentioned how they're, you know, top 10 against crafty finishers. Not a big surprise when you have Rudy Gobert in the middle of that defense. Let's go to Utah. You look at this team right now, they obviously are going to continue to be without Bojan Bogdanovic. So I was looking at the numbers since the season resumed.
Okay.
Jordan Clarkson leads the Jazz in usage rate, 29.9%.
He leads the Jazz in usage, but I don't know if he leads the Jazz in efficiency.
That is not a hot take. I mean, he tried for us the last two games. I mean, 6 of 30 from the field. Here's the thing, though. Still fairly priced. Still going to shoot the ball a lot. Like, I don't...
I mean, when a player's that cheap, volume is all you need.
Yeah.
And you know, a player like Clarkson, I mean, you being a Cavs fan, you are extremely familiar. If he gets hot, he's hot. So this is a player that at the price that he is across the industry, you know, I see no reason to intentionally shy away. I don't think his $4,700 price has moved in two or three slates.
Yeah, and using that DVP tool, which we'll be mentioning a lot, but you need to go check it out firsthand. Memphis is 22nd against the score trait and 21st against the bench trait. So like they're not very good against the type of player that Jordan Clarkson is, and like he's probably, like, if he gets hot, he could play 30 minutes. If he doesn't, you probably see him around 24, 25. But at that price, he could do enough. And you're going to get some stints where he's on the court without Donovan Mitchell. And, you know, that's where he's going to take a lot of his shots. So I have no problem with him. Again, like I said, Donovan Mitchell, I prefer him to Ja Morant at $500 cheaper. Just think it's a better matchup. It's a pace-up spot for him. Anybody else from Utah? I mean, Royce O'Neal is kind of like, you know what you're going to get from him. He's 5K. You're going to get 33, 34 minutes as long as he's, you know, not getting into foul trouble or anything.
Yeah.
He's really safe, I feel like.
Yeah, I think Royce O'Neal's safe. He's not going to be one that contributes offensively much, but rebounder, and you know, I don't know if you watched the game against the Lakers. He actually brought the ball up the floor quite a bit. So he does have the ball in his hands a lot more than your average undersized four will. I think his salary is fair, what, $5,000 on DraftKings? I think he can do worse. But again, not someone I'm going to go out of my way for. But other than him, there's not really anyone else on Utah that I have a ton of interest in.
Yeah, you know, Joe Ingles isn't a guy that really benefits without Bogdanović. He's more of a guy that has benefited without Conley, who's been hurt for a lot of the year because he handles the ball more and really high assist guy when Conley or Mitchell are off the floor. But Bogdanović is more of a spot-up guy, so that doesn't really translate for him. So, like, if I'm going to play anybody in that range, I'll just play Mike Conley for a little bit more. Gobert, I was really on in tournaments against the Thunder. Didn't really pan out. They got kind of blown out for most of that game. Yeah, I could see it with him at 7,300. He's probably going to go overlooked. Not a top-tier play for me, though. But Memphis' defense should take a hit, especially in the paint without Jaren Jackson Jr., which does bode well for Donovan Mitchell, who is always, you know, among the league leaders in drives per game. So he's my favorite from this team. I think it would be Royce O'Neal, number two, or Jordan Clarkson.
I like it. I would probably go Mitchell, Clarkson, O'Neal. That would be probably my three priorities from the Jazz.
All right. Let's move on. 76ers, been a really interesting start for them in the bubble. They should be in a much better spot here against the depleted Washington Wizards. They are 10.5-point favorites, 231.5 total. It's the age-old NBA DFS problem for me. The 76ers are in a great matchup, but they're all healthy and they're all expensive. Joel Embiid, 10-4 on DraftKings. Ben Simmons, Ben Simmons is fine, 87. Not like super expensive, but Tobias Harris, 8,600. He's played well. But this could be a situation. I know Brett Brown said he wants Embiid around 38 minutes heading into the playoffs. He hasn't been close to that yet, obviously. Is this a spot where they could finally get it together and just, you know, they're 10.5-point favorites? Embiid, in a matchup perspective, is, you know, I don't think they might not be a better play in the slate at any position than Joel Embiid in terms of just raw matchup and what he could do against his team. I mean, they're bottom five in rebounding. They allow the second highest field goal percentage at the rim. What do we do with the Sixers now that they're healthy? Well, not now that they're healthy, but since they're healthy.
I think this is a spot. You know, you mentioned the expensive salaries on them. When the team is healthy, I typically default to Embiid. I think when he's on the court, he's going to be the alpha, and he's shown that the last couple games. He's attempted 40 shots total over the last two games. He's seen an average of about 32.5 minutes. Over 27 points in each game. He's been massive on the boards. But this is also a player, especially, you know, you mentioned how big the spread in this matchup is. He can dominate and pay off his salary in 20 to 25 minutes. I think the 38 minutes that Brett Brown spoke into existence, I don't think that's realistic. And like you said, we have not seen that. But I do think it bodes well for the fact that he should still see around at least 30 minutes a game, even in a matchup like this. I love Embiid today. Washington is... Obviously, I don't need to shove this down your throat. They're not good defensively. As much as I love Thomas Bryant, he's not going to stop Joel Embiid. You know, they're bottom seven in the league against four of his six archetypes that actually makes it like primary ball handler, scorer, rim protector, skilled center, rebounder. That's both sides of the ball. There's literally not one spot in this game where he should not dominate.
Yeah, he's always my favorite. I want to say 90% of the time I'm looking at the Sixers, he's my favorite. Ben Simmons, 8,700. I will have some interest. He hasn't been fantastic. He got into foul trouble last game. I think it's a really good get-right spot for him. Mm-hmm. The Wizards will play fast. They'll play sloppy, which is those games where you're playing a fast-paced team that turns the ball over a lot, tailor-made for Ben Simmons, who will get easy assists in transition. I don't know how many times this year Ben Simmons would just steal the ball in transition and kick it out for an easy three. And he can obviously, you know, attack the rim as well. They don't have a lot of rim protection. He's probably my second favorite. I just struggle to get to Tobias at this price. I know he's played well, but at 8,600, like, his upside... Yeah, he's been shooting, but what's his upside? Like, he's gone for 45 and 42 and a half the last two games.
I would argue that with a fully healthy team, I would argue that he's just had two ceiling games.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, is he a bad play? No, not necessarily, but he's clearly, you know, not top... I don't even know if he's top three in the pecking order on this team because...
No. The issue for me, I don't think there's a lot of room for error here. You know, if he were $1,000 cheaper, you'd be okay with 30 to 35 fantasy points. But if you're spending $8,600 and you get 30 to 35 fantasy points, you're going to be disappointed. And I think that's well within his range of outcomes. So I'm shying away.
What about Josh Richardson? We have this new Sixers lineup where Richardson is coming off the bench, right? So
yep.
Much better last game, took 15 shots. He's only 5K. Like, I'd probably be more inclined to just pay 5K for him than 8,600 for Tobias because... If they both hit their floors, I feel like it's, you know, Tobias probably a little bit more fantasy points to be projected, but just because of minutes and usage. But at the same time, if Richardson's come off the bench, like, he can play a little bit of that, you know, that point guard position if they need him to. There's been times this season before the coronavirus stuff where he was bringing the ball up when Ben Simmons is off the floor. I could easily see that continuing here, especially in a good matchup against the Wizards. I kind of like Richardson.
I actually like Richardson a lot, and you have to think that if this game gets out of hand, they're going to sit Embiid, Simmons, and Harris first. Richardson could see a lot of run at the one if they do blow this team out. So I think his price is really, really safe. I think this is a matchup because of the pace and the sloppiness that Washington plays. I think this has a lot of potential when it comes to intercepting passing lanes for someone like, I mean, obviously Simmons, but an area where Richardson excels as well. I like it. I think the volume last game really, really helps ease my stomach on Richardson, so I'm all aboard with you. I would probably put him ahead of Tobias Harris in terms of the pecking order on this team.
I'm not playing Al Horford.
Nope.
Any Shake?
I don't really have any interest in Shake. Him, you know, I don't really need... There's no need for Alec Burks, Korkmaz. These guys will get, you know, Tybull. Like, they'll get incremental run if it's a blowout, but I don't think it'll be enough compared to the other value on the slate to really warrant consideration, especially with the team fully healthy.
Let's go to the Wizards side. So the first game, it was Shabazz starting at the point guard. It was Ishmith starting last game. I could see them going back to Napier here. But, I mean, you look at these two guards. Obviously, Bradley Beal is not with the team. It's just massive, massive loss and massive usage to go around. Like, they're just completely depleted right now. As a result, like, both Ishmith and Shabazz Napier have usage rates north of 25% since the restart. Matchup's not great, but they're going to be on the floor. You have a guy like Troy Brown, who has been always an underrated kind of assists and peripherals guy. He has a 3.1% usage bump without Beal this year, and he's a sneaky good rebounder, 20% rebounding rate. He's probably... And then Thomas Bryant's been fantastic in these couple games now since the restart. Most difficult matchup yet, but they're going to need him on the floor. He's expensive, though. 6,800 against Embiid's a little bit scary. What do you make of the Wizards? Because, like, they got to play dudes. I mean, Isaac Bonga's in the starting lineup. He's 3,900.
I think I love Thomas Bryant. I just don't think this is a matchup I would target him. I think his minutes, I think we'll see him around 30 minutes. But when it comes to look at his matchups he's had recently, they haven't necessarily been to the caliber of Embiid. If I'm going to target the Wizards, especially understanding how this game could end up, it's going to be the underpriced guys. I think I start with Troy Brown. You know, Wizards are 28th in ADVP against bench players. He's also, like you said, he's shown a ton of peripheral upside. Like, he's flirted with triple doubles for the last two games.
And that's not just a bubble thing. Like, he's done that when dudes have been out because Beal's been hurt for a lot of this season. He's done that multiple times this year. So it's not like it's not a fluke.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we were his first game against Phoenix was somewhat disappointing. Exploded for over 50 fantasy points the second game. Third game, people were kind of disappointed. You know, he 10-8-7, great, well-rounded stat line, only shot 36%. But at his price, he still had 30 fantasy points. That's over 5X value, which is obviously the benchmark you want to hit. I have no problem playing Troy Brown. Like you said, someone has to produce. And when it comes to playing defense like Philly, I want a dynamic player that doesn't have to rely on scoring. That's exactly what Troy Brown doesn't have to do. So I'm all aboard Troy Brown. He'd probably be my number one option. I'm indifferent on the point. What do you make of Shabazz Napier and Ish Smith in this matchup? I think they're both in store for good playing time and usage. I just don't know if it's where I'd go.
I mean, there's a $600 difference.
Yep.
Ish is cheaper. I'd probably just lean towards whoever starts, but I could see it. Like, if Ish Smith starts, it could be, like he did last game, it could easily just be a situation where he starts and plays, you know, 22 minutes and Shabazz could play 25. Like, mm-hmm. I'd probably just take the cheaper guy. Not really, like, a priority for me. Ish is a good assist producer, so you could get that. But again, the Sixers aren't an easy defense to score on, let alone when you're not, you know, when you're missing Bradley Beal, when you're missing one of the best three-point shooters in the league in Davis Bertans. Like, it just doesn't help. Isaac Bonk has been starting, 3,900. Then Jerome Robinson's played 20 minutes in every game since the restart. He's taken 9, 12, and 18 shots. He's 4,800. Probably has a little bit more of a ceiling than somebody like Bonga. Yeah. Any of those guys interest you? And I mean, Rui is just kind of priced where he's going to play. Probably he might play the most minutes out of any of these guys, but you know, 5,700, fine, but not a great spot, especially if Ben Simmons is going to be playing a lot of that four.
Yeah, and frankly, like Rui, if I'm being honest, has been somewhat disappointing to me in the bubble. He hasn't been shooting well whatsoever. He hasn't been crashing the glass like we're used to. I think his price has obviously come down to reflect that, where he's not a horrible player. I just don't necessarily know if the ceiling is there in that matchup. I don't really care for Bonga. Jerome Robinson, though, is I was going to note him if you didn't say him. I think he's going to really fly under the radar. I think people are going to be a little afraid to pay $4,800 for him without realizing how good he's been. He's taken 30 shots over the last two games. I don't think that's something we would have ever said or ever thought we'd say on an NBA podcast, that Jerome Robinson is averaging 15 field goals over the last two games, but here we are. He's contributed here and there with peripherals. He's shot 10 threes last game too, so if he converts on four or five of them, obviously that might be a stretch, but there's a bonus on DraftKings for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything else from this one?
No, that's a pretty one-sided matchup. Sprinkle in some volume with Washington, but it's going to be a pretty brutal game, if in my opinion. Except I thought that about the Bucks game today too, and look what happened.
Yeah, man, your team stinks. Giannis shouldn't win MVP.
Talk to me in, I guess not June. What month? October?
Yeah, I guess it would be.
That's when the finals would be. It's weird. I guess we'll have a new Mr. October then.
Denver at San Antonio. No total or spread as we deal with a handful of injuries. Will Barton and Gary Harris both already rolled out again for the Nuggets. And then Jamal Murray's questionable. He's missed. Mm-hmm. He hasn't played since the restart. He's dealing with a hamstring injury. He is questionable. We've seen Monty Morris start and get plenty of run the last two games. You look at this Denver team. We'll start with them. So the two games since the restart, no surprise here because he led the league in this category all year, but Nikola Jokic leads the NBA again with 121 touches per game. But Monty Morris is top 12 at 82.5. I mean, he obviously gets a huge bump without Jamal Murray there. Nikola Jokic against San Antonio, who's really hurting in their front court right now, 9,700. Monty Morris up to 5,100. And then you have Michael Porter Jr. What do we do with him? Career best game from him last time, 44 minutes, 59 fantasy points, 37 and 12. Denver, there's going to be opportunity again for Michael Porter Jr., Torrey Craig, all these guys. How do we rank the Nuggets here? And again, this is still contingent on the status of Jamal Murray.
You know, I think skinny Jokic is obviously number one here. I think it is an exploitable matchup. San Antonio's interior is much worse without Aldridge, who himself wasn't a great interior defender. But Jokic has a 32% usage rate, 41% assist rate, 14% rebound rate since the restart. He has been doing everything, but that's not something we're not used to. I think the only reason he saw his minutes limited, what was it, two games ago because of the blowout? Other than that, I don't see any reason. His price, what is he, a little less than 1,000 cheaper than Embiid?
He's 9-7, Embiid's 10-4. Yeah.
I would almost give Jokic the 1A. Embiid the 1B, especially.
I kind of want to play both of them.
I mean, yes, this is a two-center slate, especially with these two. But Jokic has been incredible. I mean, there's triple-double upside here, which is not something you get with Embiid. He's played a lot of minutes. He played 39 minutes last game, which is not something we're used to seeing, but it's something the Nuggets need right now for seeding purposes, and especially without Jamal Murray. Like, he is going to be the catalyst on offense. Like you said, he's touching the ball more than any player in the NBA right now. I see no reason to shy away from him, I should say.
Yeah, and if Jamal Murray's out again, like, Jokic is not shy to get the defensive rebound and bring the ball up. Yeah. He will do that.
I mean, a 41% assist rate for a center, that's more than probably 70% of the point guards in the NBA.
I heard Eddie Fear talking about this on his show on FTN a couple of days ago. They were debating who's the best center in the league, Jokic or Embiid. Who would you pick?
I think Jokic is the best. I think Embiid is the most dominant.
That's fair, because, like, offensively, if you, like, Jokic, I would give the nod offensively, just how all well-rounded he is, but defensively, I don't think it's close. Like, Agreed. That plays a huge part in it. But, yeah, I love Jokic here. Monty Morris, if Jamal Murray's out, is he still kind of fine for you at 5,100?
Yeah, I think he is. I think any player at 5,100 touching the ball that much is. He shot 12 times last game, shot 39 minutes, so as long as the game stays close, I think he'll do well. The only thing holding him back is, in my opinion, been the surprising play of Torrey Craig. You know, before the restart, Craig, when Murray, you know, or Harris or Barton was out, he would obviously be a fill-in, but he was more of a just stand in the corner and take up space player. He's actually been contributing and playing a little more aggressive, so I think that's siphoned a little production from Morris, but not enough to kind of deter you from him at only 5,100.
Yeah, and Torrey Craig's always been a guy for Denver where they would play him a lot more against, you know, the James Hardens, Luka Doncic's,
yeah, exactly.
Like as a defensive stopper, especially because Gary Harris has just not been able to stay healthy. Gary Harris is usually that guy for them. Mm-hmm. Michael Porter Jr. is really interesting on the slate because he had a huge game. He's been such a tease all year, right? Like, we see all this signs of greatness, and then he gets injured, or Mike Malone pulls him early in the game because he's not playing well, then he only plays 14 minutes. So after a 44-minute, 59 fantasy point outing, I could see Michael Porter Jr. being a massive trap, or I could see him being, oh, you didn't play him again? You're an idiot. Like, which has me kind of leaning to be underweight on him in tournaments because Jeremy Grant and Torrey Craig are playing minutes regardless of what Michael Porter Jr. does. It's just, if Michael Porter Jr. starts off slow again or doesn't play well, Mike Malone will not play him. Like, he's done it so many times. So I think I might be more willing to play Jeremy Grant at 45 or Torrey Craig at 42. But obviously, like, if you told me all three of those guys are going to play 33 minutes in a game, Michael Porter Jr.'s upside is obviously way higher than those guys. But I think that Michael Porter Jr., in terms of ownership and in minutes, could be the most interesting player in the slate.
I agree. I think he's, what is he, 22? Really, really young player, and we saw that kind of rear attend the first game. He didn't play a lot of time because he was not giving effort, so which is frustrating as a fantasy player because you can't predict that. So if he comes out and just gets careless with the ball a couple times, there is no reason for Mike Malone to keep him on the court, and he showed that.
Yeah, I don't think we have a tool for effort yet at FTN.
Correct. I wouldn't be surprised at this rate if we do. But the thing is, when he's on, look at last game. Like, the upside's undeniable. I think if I'm running five tournament lineups, I'd probably have him in one or two. But I don't think I'd go more than 40% exposure just because the downside is there, and his price isn't, you know, the 45 to 5,500 that it used to be.
Do you have any interest in Millsap? Like I
said, it's so hard. The range of outcomes is crazy. Millsap,
DeRozan's going to be playing the four, so it's interesting. It's an interesting spot for him with DeRozan playing the four because offensively he has a size advantage. But then you would say, oh, DeRozan's going to stretch him out. But DeRozan doesn't shoot a lot of threes anyway. He's a mid-range guy, a driver, so I don't know, 5,100 seems kind of perfectly fine for Millsap, who played 35 minutes last game. That game go to overtime? The OKC game?
I think it did. Let me double check.
If it did, that would make sense, because I had to have. Michael Porter Jr. played 44 minutes.
Yeah, if he played 44 minutes, he 100% did.
Completely forgot that, yeah. So yeah, I mean, in a regular game that goes to the end of the fourth quarter, you're probably looking at 28 minutes from Millsap, but, I mean, he's only 5,100. Probably
he's really cheap. I think he'll see 30 minutes. Maybe not 30. I'd say he sees at least 27 minutes, which you don't need a ton of production. It's an attackable interior, but, again, this is not a high-usage player whatsoever. So I think he's a cash play. If you are struggling to fill the last spot in your lineup at utility or forward and you have 5,100, I don't see a reason to not play Paul Millsap. But he's not someone I go out of my way for in tournaments because the upside's just not there.
Yeah, he's not somebody you start your lineup construction around.
Exactly.
Let's go to the Spurs. Really interesting team here. Obviously, without Aldridge and Trey Lyles, and Bryn Forbes is going to miss again. So, shortens this rotation, which can always be a problem with Greg Popovich. But, I mean, you still have the three guards that are going to play a lot. You know, DeJounte Murray, Derek White, and Patty Mills. The latter playing the fewest minutes, you would imagine. Murray's such an interesting player. I love DeJounte Murray.
Yep.
Just a long, athletic, really, really, really talented guard who can contribute in a lot of ways. I mean, he had 10 rebounds against Memphis. And, like, you're not projecting for 10 rebounds, but, like, if he gets 7 or 8 again, I wouldn't be surprised because they're missing all these guys. They're playing smaller lineups. And as a result, like, if DeMar DeRozan's playing the 4, more opportunities for rebounding for him, but also these guards. 6K for him. Derek White is playing really well. He's 5,900. I mean, you may have to get one of these guys right, and they're pretty much the same price. So if you had to pick, who would you choose between Murray and Derek White?
I'm going Derek White. I love DeJounte Murray, but I'm on the same page as you. It just seems like Pop still has a bit of a short leash with him. He'll get in some foul trouble. His minutes are much more erratic. If you're looking at Derek White, you know, he's seen at least 29 minutes, at least 11 shot attempts in each of the first three games in the bubble. He hasn't scored less than 29.5 fantasy points. Like, he is much more productive on the offensive end while also chipping in pretty respectfully in the peripheral categories. Like, he had 8 boards against the Kings. He had 7 assists against the Grizzlies. I just think he's a little more reliable. I don't think his ceiling is necessarily as high as Murray's. While it's close, I just, at this point, I think his floor is a little more secure.
Yeah, I think both are firmly in play.
Agree, 100%. I think I wouldn't be surprised if Murray or White and or White is a popular option, especially on FanDuel on a 2-point guard slate.
Lonnie Walker was obviously good. Not Kevin last
Johnson's
game.
Been a fine value.
Yeah, they've been playing. Like you mentioned that before the podcast, before we got on that. Keldon Johnson's been getting more run, which seems to looks like that he's maybe the play over Lonnie Walker if you were going down that low. And then obviously the focal point of this team is DeMar DeRozan, who is playing power forward right now. Which, I mean, never been a huge peripheral guy. He's been a little bit better each year since his last year in Toronto in peripherals, but if he can get more rebounds, that'd be great. He's 8,300. Denver is interesting. They're really, really good defensively in terms of, at least overall. I know they're missing guys now, but over the course of the season, they're really good at they allow a low field goal percentage on mid-range shots, which is what DeRozan, you know, lives off.
That's how he thrives,
But they're also, like, bottom 7 at defending the rim, which he's 2nd in the league in drives per game. He's always been top 5 in that category for years now. So, and you know the usage is going to be there. So, DeMar DeRozan, 8,300, where does he kind of rank on this slate for you? Because, you know, the usage is going to be, you know, 30%.
If you're looking in that price range, you know, he's, what, 8,200, like you said. I think I'd opt for him over, like we mentioned, Tobias Harris being 86. I think I would take DeRozan at 83, 10 times out of 10.
Let me ask you this, and we'll get to this game later. 8,300 for DeRozan or 8,200 for Tatum?
Tatum, 100%.
Which is funny because back in our heyday doing the podcast, we were both team Jason Tatum is overrated.
Correct. Like, I tweeted about that.
He's so good now.
I could not. Like, he is so – but he's also fun to watch. Like, he is such a fluid and good basketball player where I will own up to being completely wrong. He is the face of the franchise.
He reminds me of T-Mac.
Yes. He even has the slight leg kick on his jump shot.
Yeah.
It's great.
He's.
I mean, he got it. Haircut Tatum was on another level last game. I absolutely love Jason Tatum. And, again, I don't want to rant about him too long before we get to the game, but if I'm comparing the two players, especially given the matchup, I'm going Tatum for 100 less. I would arguably even go John Morant for $300 less.
Yeah, it's definitely fair. But what about Oh, go ahead.
No, I mean, I just like you said, the usage is so high on DeMar right now, where it's kind of hard to argue against playing him. The matchup is just brutal. Like, yeah. Have you looked at the ADVP for him or no?
For DeRozan,
it's brutal. Like, he the Nuggets are top 10 in the league, top 11 in every single archetype that DeRozan categorizes as.
Yeah, it's definitely not ideal. What about the forwards or centers? I mean,
I don't really like Poeltl. That's the one. I'm going to cross him off the list right away. I just don't think, like, he's not productive enough for his salary.
Who, Poeltl?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
In this matchup.
He gives you nothing from the three-point department. Literally nothing. Yeah. And then you have, like, you know, Drew Ebanks, who might play, you know, 20 to 25 minutes. But, I don't know. This, what happened to this team? Bellinelli's also questionable, I should add. Like, if they get him back, does that... That probably would hurt, like, Lonnie Walker or Keldon Johnson.
Lonnie Walker and Keldon Johnson the most. But again, Keldon Johnson's been playing some pretty good basketball in limited minutes. It might knock him from playing 20 minutes a game.
Yeah.
You know, I've been using him as a value play these last couple of weeks, but... Or these last couple of days, excuse me. So that might knock him out of contention, but I don't really see it affecting the point guards at all. Or DeRozan.
Thunder at the Lakers, or not at the Lakers, but versus the Lakers. I forgot there's no home and away teams. Not anymore. The Lakers have clinched the one seed in the West, so this could be, maybe not this game yet, but we're going to start to see LeBron James and Anthony Davis' minutes limited, especially because the Lakers are, you know, they're missing guys in the first place. You know, Rajon Rondo, mm-hmm. Avery Bradley, those types of guys. Does the Lakers clinching of the one seed impact your thoughts on LeBron and Davis for this game, or is it just the fact that they're expensive, they could be limited if they want to, and there's other good plays on this slate? Plus, the matchup isn't incredible.
It's hard to determine whether or not until we potentially hear anything from, you know, Coach Frank Vogel about minutes to bank on them being limited, but I frankly would be more deterred by the matchup than I would be a minutes limit. Like, if you look at the top three priced players on the slate, you get LeBron, Embiid, and Davis. I would probably prioritize Embiid over LeBron and Anthony Davis just because of the matchup alone. But again, you can't argue with 10-3 for Anthony Davis. If he's as aggressive as he was last game, which he came out chucking last game.
Yeah, by the way, this isn't new. LeBron has said all year that they're going to play through Anthony Davis, and they've done that since the restart. Like, 100% they've done
that. Is LeBron leading the league in assists per game right now?
He was leading the league in assists for a large chunk of the season. He's at 10.4. The only guys that I could see
playing through Anthony Davis, or yeah, funneling the production through Anthony Davis, which is easy to do when you have a deterrent.
And we have to remember, LeBron has always been a point forward, but he's literally played point guard for the Lakers this year.
Correct. I mean, I definitely, like, even if you limit, like, look at what these guys have played. Anthony Davis has played 35, 35, and 39 minutes. LeBron has played 34, 35, 35. If you limit them, you're probably looking at, what, 30 to 31 this game? That's still more than enough to pay off both of their salaries. I'd probably bank on Anthony Davis just for the $400 discount. But I'm still, I would personally prioritize Embiid over the two. But that's obviously no discredit to these two.
Anybody else from Lakers? I mean, Caruso, Danny Green, these guys are both going to play, you know, 22 to 25 minutes. Maybe Green starts to see a little bit less minutes, and that could help Caruso's really become a really valuable player for this team, especially defensively.
Mm-hmm. I like Caruso. I like Caruso, not necessarily in terms of fantasy, especially in this matchup. If there's any other player that I would have an interest in targeting, especially for salary relief, it's Kyle Kuzma. Low volume last game, but he'll typically get 8, 9, 10 shots a game, play at least 25 minutes. He's pretty cheap for the ceiling he provides, so I like him in terms of value on the Lakers. Do you have anything different?
I mean, you could do worse at 3,900 than KCP, who's kind of has to play solid minutes now because Bradley's out. He's been starting, but yeah, it's, you don't get excited about, you know, Danny Green and KCP, because in this offense they're going to be, you know, spot up shooters. But, you know, Kuzma, if they do, you know, give LeBron fewer minutes, the offense will go through him a lot more, and he's not known for his facilitating, so he's definitely going to shoot.
Yeah, that's true. Off the wall too. I mean, shot in the dark in a tournament, I would not hate Deion Waiters at 3,500. He's a high volume guy. He comes in 20 minutes a game. If he's hitting his shots, he can pay off.
Oh, also, revenge game, Deion Waiters. That's a joke, true, by the way. 100% a joke.
True.
The Thunder, though, they are going to be without Dennis Schroeder, who's away. Well, they were without him last game, but he's still away from the team. He's tending to his wife for going to have his second child, so congrats to Dennis Schroeder. But we saw Chris Paul play 40 minutes last game, which Chris Paul for most of the season with the Thunder has been kind of maxed out at like 33, 34 mm-hmm. if you're lucky. So Schroeder being out, I would expect this game to be pretty competitive. Chris Paul at 7,900, the matchup isn't incredible, but he's...
I mean, Chris Paul is also at a 29% usage rate. Mm-hmm. That's high for him. I mean, I'm a Chris Paul stan. Like, I'll go on record on this podcast. I have a buddy who agrees with me, a good friend. I think Chris Paul is a top five MVP candidate this year.
Wow, that is very bold. Not that he hasn't played well to deserve it, but wow.
I don't think anyone expected the Thunder to be in the middle of the Western Conference playoff run. Like, they're what, the 5 seed right now, the 4 or 5 seed? I don't think anyone expected that. Like, everyone thought Chris Paul was going to be bought out.
Yeah, that was the absolute consensus. Like, he didn't want to play there, and they would be bad enough to where he would just be bought out.
It's hard to justify just quantitatively by statistics him being a top five MVP candidate, but I think the impact goes so far beyond with this
team. All right, so Giannis and LeBron are 1-2.
Harden will be 3.
Where would you put Kawhi and Luka? Anthony Davis might even be up there.
Oh, God. Maybe he's not top five. Damn, Joe.
Right.
But he's bottom line, he has been incredibly impactful, and I don't think people have realized how good he's been this year. I think that's also rubbed off on SGA. SGA is great this year.
He's so dope.
I think both – I love SGA. I think both will benefit from Schroeder out as well as Danilo. All these are high-volume guys. You know, Danilo sees a 28% usage rate over the last game without short air. The issue with Danilo is he doesn't really contribute a ton in other categories. He'll pull down his fair share of boards, but this is a matchup where he might struggle a little bit.
He's like Bojan Bogdanovic, but slightly more rebounds.
This is a player I'm hoping by the end of his contract he's on the buyout market.
Any value like I mean, or not Lakers Thunder like. Lou Dort is going to start and play decent minutes, but he does pretty much nothing. But like, if you love your lineup and you have $3,200 left, like, you're going to get a guy that's going to play 30 minutes. Hamadou Diallo is going to see some more run, could get to 23, 24 minutes with Schroeder out. Another guy that's not going to score much, but he's a little bit more in terms of peripherals than somebody like Dort would be. And then Steven Adams, I haven't played Steven Adams. Like, obviously, we haven't played NBA DFS in a while, but even back when we were playing every night, they have limited his minutes a ton this year. Like, he's played so many games where he's been at, like, 26 minutes. Now, I know that they're without Mike Muscala, whatever. They can play Nerlens, they can play whoever. Like, they have not given him minutes consistently. Yeah, this is a terrible matchup.
He finally got 34 minutes last game, fouled out in overtime. It's not a good matchup. He's not athletic. Like, he's a big dude. He's just not athletic enough to keep up with someone like Anthony Davis. He's cheap. I'm still a full fade. I like Steven Adams. I just don't think this is a good game for him.
All right, 2 games left. Toronto and the Magic. 224.5 total. The Raptors favored by 5. Orlando obviously going to be without Jonathan Isaac, who continues to just show so much potential and then suffers injuries, which is unfortunate, but... torn left ACL, he's done. Brutal for a team that's trying to make some noise in the Eastern Conference. What does this do for the Magic?
I mean, without Jonathan Isaac, I think they lose arguably their best defender on the
team. It's not arguably, by the way.
That's true.
It's not even close.
I think it could arguably be the most athletic because of Aaron Gordon. But yeah, he's easily the best defender, especially on the perimeter on this team. He'll open up a few more minutes for Terrence Ross if he slides to the 3, for Aaron Gordon. But because he was so limited in his game and a half that he played, I don't think we're gonna see any type of out of the ordinary rotation just because we were used to seeing it without him before the pandemic hit. So looking at the Magic, you know, it's not a good matchup for them off the bat. Toronto's extremely good defensively. They don't run at a fast pace, albeit neither does Orlando, but I don't necessarily see Isaac's absence really making anyone pop off of the page. You know, do you view it any differently?
No. I don't like this game all that much in general. You have two really slow-paced teams. You have Toronto that's at full strength. Like, Van Vliet was a value. He was just really cheap when the season started and restarted, and then he had that huge game, really good game against the Lakers, and a monster game against Miami. He's 7,700. Like, just too much for me in this matchup. Lowry, I'd rather play Mitchell for cheaper. I'd rather play Ja Morant for cheaper, so not really a priority for me either. And then you have, Serge Ibaka at 6K. He is not needed to play those huge minutes that he was playing before the break when Marc Gasol was hurt. Marc Gasol at 4,200. Like, if he gets 25 minutes, perhaps he could be a value center. This game's gross, man.
It is. I think it's going to be a much better game to watch.
James Ennis is 3,300. He could play 25 minutes with Isaac out now if you want to go that route, but you need him to hit some threes or get some rebounds. Other than that, he doesn't do much.
I just don't see – I mean, I'll be honest. This is probably one of the games that, regardless of how many good players are in it, you can probably safely cross it off as just an unnecessary game on this slate.
The one thing I will say is Evan Fournier is only 5,200.
He's a volume hog.
Yeah, and they've been in some blowouts. Like, they only won by 10 against Brooklyn, but they were ahead that game for the majority of it. So 25 and 22 minutes. If this game's closer, he'll be back to that 32-33 minute range.
Yeah, that's fair, because they got destroyed by Sacramento last game, right?
They were the ones winning. They won by 16.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And then I would say I never hate Vucevic at this price. It's just on this slate where you have Jokic and Embiid and Anthony Davis. Like, are you going to get that ceiling from Vucevic, and are you going to give up a center spot for him? On DraftKings, if you want to, like, use one of Embiid, Davis, and Jokic and then go to Vucevic as a leverage, maybe. But, again, will he have the upside? That's the question against Toronto.
It's also the second leg of a back-to-back, too. So this team could come out sluggish. I don't mind. I think the one player that I don't mind is actually Pascal, just because of his ceiling. But again, the issue, you kind of just have the same issue with Vucevic. He's kind of in that awkward price where, you know, he's right below Jokic and Davis. He's right ahead of Ben Simmons. He's right ahead of Tatum and Vucevic and Ja Morant, where he might be forgotten, which if you're playing single entering cash games, I think you leave him, but this could be a good leverage spot in a large field tournament.
So for anybody that's new to my NBA analysis, Pascal Siakam is my NBA version of Marvin Jones.
Yep.
But I will probably full fade him here, and here's why. 8,800, he's priced at a ceiling in a game that has a snail's pace. And I love playing Siakam in transition games, because as much as I love him, he's still so awkward when he has the ball. He takes these weird, like, running layup floaters that are just kind of chaotic. He's just at his best in transition and occasional post-ups. He is among the league leaders in transition points per game this season. That's when I really want to look to him, in these pace-up games where you're getting, you know, turnovers and breaks the other end. Siakam, 6 points per game in transition, fourth most in the league. But Orlando, fewest points per game allowed in transition at 16.4. They're going to play slow, post up a Vucevic. So not the spot for me for Siakam, but he's forever Bay. Let's close it out with Brooklyn and Boston. The Brooklyn Nets, now the best team in the NBA. They beat Milwaukee today. That's how it works. Really interesting, though, because heading into that game, you know, they sit LeVert, they sit Joe Harris, they sit Jared Allen. They're like, all right, we're just going to punt this game against the best team in the NBA, and we'll see what happens. But then, you know, they come out and play hard and get the win. I know Brooklyn was limiting minutes and had Brook Lopez out, or not Brooklyn, Milwaukee, but would you expect those guys, LeVert, Allen, and Harris, to all be back in this one?
I think in some capacity, yes. I think, you know, a lot, like LeVert
had, it's just a bruised thigh for LeVert.
Correct. Like, it's a fancy way of getting by with resting a player.
Same with Joe Harris, sore back. Like, I would imagine all these guys play.
I think Jared Allen will for sure be back because they did designate him for rest last game.
Yeah, Jamal Crawford's the one that
probably
He's got a hamstring injury, didn't return. What did he play? He played like 6 minutes, but
yeah, he got hit on the screen.
It was in the second quarter, so. Yep. Yeah.
Again, I mean, this is a game though where it's like, it's hard because I would have looked at the game today outside of their value and said, oh, this is a game where they're just going to get destroyed. The defense is too good. And look what happens. I think the situation is different if these guys come back. I think Caris LeVert's price, regardless of matchup, when he's under 8K, I think he's an auto target just because of the insane usage he's going to get. He has come out a little sluggish in the bubble, slow starts. He shot under 45% all three games so far. But you can't argue with 34-35% usage rate at that price. That's close to Westbrook level.
Yeah, I agree. He's perfectly fine even in this tougher matchup. I don't know where else I'm going to go from this team, though. I mean, Timothy Luwawu-Cabarrot has been a legit thing since the bubble started. 26 points, sandwiched between an 8-point game. These Nets wings are all, like, just to the point where it's like, do I want to pay $5,200 for TLC? Do I want to pay $5,800 for Garrett Temple? That scares the crap out of
me. That's the thing. Like, I think if you're starving for value, sure. But I mean, let's look at the slate as a whole one more time. I think if you go down to that range, what is it? Let's say 5,200 or 5,700. Even in the matchup, I'd rather play Fournier at 52. I'd rather play Dylan Brooks based on volume. But other than that, you know, like Shabazz Napier is right over there, but they're honestly looking like
Tyler okay Johnson 6,100. Like,
yeah, that's a full fade for me.
Absolutely not.
He wasn't necessarily a good play today. He's not an efficient basketball player.
Jared Allen, if he's going to keep getting these minutes, is underpriced at 5,400. And
Boston's not necessarily an elite.
No, Daniel Tice is a solid defender, but then, you know, whatever minutes Enes Kanter's going to get are going to be, you know, optimal minutes for Jared Allen. I kind of like that price on him. And again, he's not hurt, so he should be playing here. And because this team is, like, we don't have to worry about who plays more minutes between him and DeAndre Jordan anymore. He's probably my favorite just at 5,400. Like, he's cheaper than all those wing, like, he's cheaper than Temple, he's cheaper than Tyler Johnson.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I think that's a good price for him. I think that
The minutes are going to go to what? Him, Dante Hall, who is not a fan of Giannis,
and
apparently.
Kurucs.
And Rajon Kurucs. And that's really all they have.
I mean, would they put Justin Anderson down there if they run small? Maybe, but not
enough. Well, because Tatum plays a lot of four, so like you can play Justin Anderson at the four against Tatum. Like, it's not like a size mismatch or anything.
That's the thing.
Right.
So I like it. I think it's a good call. At 5,400, I think, like, the issue is, look at, like, if you want three centers, one has to be able to play power forward. So obviously, if Anthony Davis is involved, sure. But is losing the combo of Jokic and Embiid worth it for $5,400 Jared Allen on a slate where there's, frankly, like, not a ton of studs to pay up for? I don't know.
Right. Let's go to Boston. Kemba Walker is going to sit this game for rest. They've been limiting his minutes since the restart, and he's going to just take the night off here. So, I mean, Jason Tatum just gets a massive, massive bump in usage, plus 4% when Kemba's off the floor. He's obviously pretty much transformed into a borderline superstar this year. 8,200, I think he's going to be one of the most popular plays of the slate. Again, like, without Kemba, and this Brooklyn team's been a little bit feistier than people think. Like, I can see this game staying close enough for Tatum to have a monster game. But, like, everybody gets a bump for this Boston team. Jaylen Brown gets a bump. Marcus Smart gets a lot more usage and a lot more ball handling duties. I think all these guys are really strong plays. Gordon Hayward as well. Like, I guess what I'm asking you is, how would you rank them? Because you got to think there's four or five Celtics in play here today, right?
Definitely, yeah. I think Tatum is by far and away the number one. I think he's underpriced given his range of outcomes. I think Jaylen Brown would probably be my number two.
I love Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, he's just such a high octane player.
If Tatum wasn't having this huge year, we'd be talking about how good Jaylen Brown is more.
Yeah, agreed. He's averaging over 20 points a game right now. I'll be honest, I did not know that until I looked at the slate today.
Yeah, he's been one of the best spot up shooters in the NBA this year. He's been really good.
I've liked the resurgence of Gordon Hayward. That's been really, really fun to watch as an NBA fan. He'd probably be my three because he's been one of the safest plays all season. I think for $200 less, you're getting a similar, if not better, range of outcomes with Jaylen Brown. So I'd probably rank top three. I'd probably go Tatum, Brown, Hayward. Smart, a bit of a bump with no Kemba, but I don't really want any part of Wanamaker. Tice is just meh to me. Obviously, you know, other players, there's not really, I don't have
Tice's any minutes have been really good the last two games, yeah, first two games.
I mean, I guess Tice could be at his price at 5,200. My thing is, if he's only center eligible.
Yeah.
So if you're down there, I'd rather go Jared Allen for $200 more.
Definitely fair. Yeah, I mean, all these guys are in play. Gordon Hayward, 13% assist rate without Kemba. Marcus Smart leads the team at 15%. Like, you just get more facilitating from Marcus Smart, which is nice because he's going to give you steals. And he still shoots a lot of threes despite being... He's been a little bit better, but he's never going to be an elite three-point shooter.
Do you think they'll put him or Jaylen Brown on Caris LeVert?
Both.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm just trying to gauge if that would increase his minutes even more incrementally, but I almost think Jaylen Brown would be a better individual matchup.
Jaylen Brown, I feel like Jaylen Brown matches up really well with him in terms of size and body type.
Yeah, agreed.
Anything else from this first slate of the podcast? Felt good to talk basketball again.
It did. I'm not seeing anything else like this. I mean, great slate. It's going to be an interesting slate. I think ownership will be spread out just because there isn't a clear-cut Harden. There's not a clear-cut Giannis. There's not a clear-cut Luka. I think it's going to be interesting to see how the ownership amongst the top four go with LeBron, AD, Embiid, and Jokic. It'll be fun. I think this will be a really fun, unique slate.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's always unique in the bubble now, but...
Yeah, we are in the bubble. By the way, TJ Warren's nickname has to be Bubble Boy now, right? Because he continues to just smash.
He's been. I mean, I think what would be really fun, and, the NBA is not going to do it, so maybe us two for FTN can do it on a podcast. We need a bubble MVP, bubble defensive player of the year, and all bubble teams.
All bubble teams. TJ
Warren would be on literally every single one. Because TJ Warren is not just scoring. He's... getting like three blocks and three steals a game. It's kind of uncanny to see him playing like this. He hasn't played like this since he played at NC State.
I was about to say, NC State is the last time he played this well consistently.
Oh my God, I went to see Xavier play them in a playing game, and he just absolutely diced us up. He was so good in college. Terrible.
Appreciate everybody tuning in. This is a very, very exciting time for Joe and I. We've been doing a bunch of stuff at FTN since launch, and... got the word that there was going to be an NBA DFS podcast, and we ran with it. So, going to see this, probably three times a week to start, and we'll see what happens from there on. But also in terms of content, I will be doing the game by game NBA article every Saturday. Joe does it every Sunday. I'll also be doing it on Wednesday. I'm covering for this slate. So the podcast is a perfect kind of warm up for me to get that done. So you'll have that before the 2:30 game starts. And yeah, it's a very, very exciting time here. Basketball is back. Hopefully football is right around the corner. Football's going to happen. I think so,
football's happening. I mean, if the MLB going through what it's going through is still happening,
I think football will be fine.
Yeah.
And if anything, football is too stubborn to go away.
But we'll be on iTunes and all that stuff soon. So once we are, we'll let you guys know, and appreciate any sort of rating, review, and comments and subscriptions. Help us out. Appreciate you guys listening. Best of luck on this slate. Check out chat and Discord throughout the day over at FTN and the live shows throughout the day. We have you covered for the entire day, which is why it's nice because, even though there's early games and late games, we have you covered for every single game. So best of luck. For Joe, I'm Adam. We'll be back next time on the FTN podcast. Appreciate it. Peace out.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam and Joe. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.